And if irresponsible scientists now still claim that all purely natural events are to be attributed to this and not to the guilt of the Earth people, and thus, the responsibility wants to be shifted from them, nevertheless, voices from the ranks of the scientists are still to be heard in the 90s, and especially in the new millennium, that everything isn't due to purely natural processes, but that to a large extent, which still amounts to 50% today, the Earth person bears the guilt for everything. Billy, thanks. That probably still had to be said. Then another question. The electromagnetic spectrum, this comprises seven main forms and naturally also exhibits different high frequencies and wavelengths. The electromagnetic radiations, which are known to our earthly scientists, are called gamma rays, X-rays, ultraviolet rays, light rays, infrared rays, microwaves, short waves, ultra-short waves, and radio waves, and to my knowledge, gamma rays exhibit the smallest wavelengths and radio waves exhibit the largest. But now, you already told me some time ago that there are still other rays, and indeed, in addition to the radioactive radiation, also neutrino radiation, electron radiation, and also tachyon radiation. Most forms of radiation are, however, invisible. Is this right? Quetzal, 38. That is correct. 39. But why do you ask? Billy, it's just for reassurance because I have further explained everything in such a way, namely in connection with cosmic electromagnetic life energy as well as evolutive energy or evolutionary energy, which are also based on radiations and oscillations in certain ranges of frequencies, as this is well known to you. Quetzal, 40. No, that isn't well known to me. 41. From where do you possess this knowledge? 42. It seems strange to me that you possess this knowledge that is still unknown to us. 43. Somehow, I bump into secrets with you over and over again. Billy, I really shouldn't say that, at least not at the present time. But if you can give me your word that you will be silent over this for the time being, then I will inform you of the origin of my knowledge. You would still have to remain silent for at least 2 to 3 years. Quetzal, 44. Be sure of my word. Billy, well then, the knowledge comes from the spirit teaching, and it is contained in the memory banks of Enoch, and Nocademian. Quetzal, 45. And you are able to withdraw knowledge from these memory banks and learn from this? Billy, I can, yes. Quetzal, 46. You give me a new riddle, which I will have to solve. 47. Will you tell me how you do this? 48. That isn't possible for us. Billy, no, I'm not allowed to do that yet. Quetzal, 49. Is it possible, however, that you can instruct me in the teaching of the evolutive energy and the cosmic electromagnetic life energy, so that I can retransmit it, too? Billy, I can do that, but only at a later time, just when the time comes to do so. But now, what is with my question? Quetzal, 50. Be assured already of my and all our thanks. Billy, thanks are neither appropriate now nor later. It is part of my duty, as you'll find out soon enough. If you permit, I would like to ask another question regarding the financial crisis and economic crisis and the breakdowns of the firms, etc. through mismanagement, huge settlements, and salaries in the hundreds of thousands and millions of financial sums for managers and boards of directors, etc. Isn't it also true that the working class will go along with the greater demands for compensations and will also contribute to the whole disaster, whereby the workers' organizations or labor unions will probably also contribute a lot to it? Quetzal, 51. That is correct, for that will actually be the case. 52. Nevertheless, this evil also applies to the high state officials and leaders who have received outrageously huge and extensively translated remunerations and pensions since time immemorial, as I know from our investigations of a related form. 53. And this translation of the remunerations of the leaders and administrators, etc. will be shamelessly boosted further in the coming time, while various layers of workers will only have pitiful incomes and livelihoods and will sometimes even live in bitter poverty. Billy, and what about health service? In terms of health insurances, will the premiums be brought in line with the demands for high wages, making them more expensive? When I returned to Switzerland in 1969 and locked in health insurance for my wife, myself, Gil Gameshaw, and Atlantis with the Beretswiller Health Insurance Company, I paid around 35 Swiss francs a month for the four of us. In 1973, I had to change the health insurance company because I moved with my family to Hinwil, and therefore, I joined Helvetia Health Insurance and, as you can see here from the health insurance book, in the month of June, I already paid 42.10 Swiss francs for the whole family. Then, in July, it was already 54.50 Swiss francs. Then Matthew Salem was born, after which the premium increased to 60.50 Swiss francs. From then, the premium rose further to 74.90 Swiss francs for 1974 and then to 86.30 Swiss francs as of January, 1975, after which the whole thing continued to increase year after year. Consequently, I already have to shell out 213.50 Swiss francs for this month of December, 1987. And the premiums are to increase enormously again next year, as has already been announced. If this continues in such a way, then I will soon no longer know how I should still shell out the health insurance for the whole family. To all of that is still coming 10% as well as a larger franchise amount per year, in addition to each doctor's bill. And as you know, my wife constantly has horrendous doctor's bills and hospital bills, as well as hospital bills for operations, etc. Quetzal, 54. We have also looked into these concerns, and unfortunately, I have to tell you that the premiums will continue to increase rapidly, according to which you will soon have to pay about 300 Swiss francs per month for you alone. Billy, nice outlooks. So let's talk about something else. I still have a question regarding neutron stars, which exhibit the greatest density in matter, as our scientists say. A thimbleful of such a neutron star should weigh, as they say, about 1 billion tons. I would like to ask whether they haven't made a mistake in the weight, for I find 1 billion tons somewhat steep. Quetzal, 55. Nevertheless, it is correct. 56. However, it is to be rectified that neutron stars do not exhibit the densest and heaviest mass but rather other objects in the material universe. 57. The matter of these tremendously heavier objects is also of a different kind than what is known to the earthly physical scientists and astrophysical scientists as well as astrophysical chemists. Billy, aha, and what do you call these objects, and at the same time, does it concern stars? Quetzal, 58. The second part of your question is to be affirmed in the way that, as a rule, it concerns former stars, so collapsed solar structures. 59. But still, such objects also exist in the form of still active suns. 60. We call the collapsed structures meat and arthellos, which translated into your language means dark heavy suns. 61. We call the still active suns of this kind Saturn arthellos, so radiant heavy suns or active heavy suns. 62. These names correspond to traditions from very early times of our people. Billy, then another question that has reference to the moon. When I was allowed to make a lunar orbit once with Sam Jace in her beamship, she explained a few things to me about our Earth's satellite, so among other things, that the side which is always facing the Earth, or the crust of the moon, as this is called, is only about 35,000 meters thick. The back of the satellite, however, is about 70,000 meters thick. Moreover, the Earth with its moon is an absolutely special case in the Sol system because out of all the inner planets, only it is orbited by such a large satellite, which stabilizes the rotational axis of the planet and which provides for the high and low tides and for the climate, which is relatively stable. About the origin of the Moon, which drifted many millions of years ago out of your space-time configuration into ours and was captured by the Earth. The earthly scientists have the craziest ideas, one of which is that a large celestial body from the masses of Mars had already collided with the developing Earth in primeval times, by what means a huge piece of the developing Earth from its early days was torn out or ejected from this, in order to circle around the Earth in the end and firmly settle to form the Moon. At the same time, it isn't considered with this crazy assertion that if such a chunk would have actually been ejected from the Earth, just by the collision with a Mars-sized space projectile, then this chunk would have been shot so far out into space by the unimaginable force that it would have sought its own way as a wandering planet through the Sol system and wouldn't have settled around the Earth. But now, I would like to ask you, why does the density ratio of the Moon on the front and the back vary so much? This has to have its particular reason, I think. If you can still explain a few things about this to me, then I would be very grateful to you. Quetzal, 63. The whole thing is founded in the mass and the attractive force of the Earth. 64. Through the Earth's attractive force, the Moon, during the course of its existence as an Earth satellite, has shifted the focal point of its mass away from the Earth, by what means its geometric center has shifted. 65. This concerns an anomaly that can appear in any planetary satellite, but of course, the mass and matter also play an important role, as well as the attractive forces of the respective planets and naturally the escape velocities of the satellites. 66. This fact ultimately determines how the density of the crust of the satellite forms on the side facing away from the planet. 67. If it concerns a moon that is constantly rotating on its own axis, so not a so-called synchronous one, like with the Earth's satellite, then an aggregate satellite and average symmetry results. 68. But if it concerns a synchronous satellite, which, therefore, always has the same side facing the planet, then the side facing away from the planet condenses, whereby then just the escape velocity of the Moon plays a significant role. 69. The force of the escape velocity pushes the mass and, thus, the matter outwardly and, therefore, to the side of the planet facing away from the satellite, but while it is held by the overall attractive force of the planet in its outer area and in a specific orbit. 70. With the Earth's Moon, it was such that at the time when it was pulled by the Earth into its course, it melted down into deep layers and began to draw its course around the planet as a glowing ball. 71. The liquid material of the Moon was influenced by the Earth's attractive force and shifted in such a way that through the escape velocity on the side facing away from the Earth, a strong thickening arose. 72. The rotation around the Earth stabilized over time, and also the entire sea of magma cooled off and solidified. 73. What still arose further on the Moon after that was a so-called acidic volcanism. 74. It should still be mentioned that the Moon was a very valuable and highly stressed protective shield for the Earth since its existence, still is and will still continue to be, namely with respect to small comets as well as meteorites that crashed down upon this thousands of times over the course of the existence of the Moon and beat countless craters into the surface of the satellite. 75. Through these space projectiles, the most diverse materials were also placed on the Moon or hurled up from the interior onto the surface, as this happened, for example, via an enormous meteorite, whose impact was observed from the Earth by the people and which unleashed an unusually high level of potassium, phosphorus, and thorium, as well as various rare Earth elements. Billy, man, Quetzal, that's more of an explanation than I had expected. But now, I would like to ask you something else about the legendary Celtic kingdom of Noricum, which should have been situated at Lake Chem. Today, everything belongs to Germany. You told me that there, Celtic blood sacrifices had been quite common among the Celts, and to be sure, in connection with the sea god Bedeus. Can you tell me more about this? Quetzal, 76. Dear friend, that should be enough of the questions and answers for today. 77. Let's now turn to the private things, for whose sake I've come here. Billy, of course. But just this one question to answer, Quetzal, 78. Well, but really only this concern, 79. It has now been more than 2,000 years since a water sanctuary, that is a cult site, was built for the sea god Bideus in the Celtic kingdom Noricum. 80. In the Celtic faith, there existed the idea with regard to this imaginary god that he would evoke storms and tempests through his wrath, whereby the wrath of the god could only be appeased through the sacrificing of human blood. 81. Virgins were chosen for this, who were sacrificed on a special Bideus altar, and indeed, as the carotid artery of their living bodies were split, and then the hearts were cut out of their bodies. 82. The blood was collected in a blood sacrifice bowl, which consisted of pure, 18-carat gold sheet metal, rolled by a blacksmith. 83. A vessel that weighed a little more than 10 kilograms and that was decorated all around by Celtic cult motifs, etc. and that had a diameter of about 50 centimeters. 84. Then, the further cult action consisted of the fact that first, the blood was sacrificed to the sea god Bideus, by being poured ritually, during the uttering of incantations, into the waters of the lake, while the cut-out hearts of the virgins were hacked into the smallest pieces and then likewise thrown into the lake under other incantations. Billy, and, does this golden blood sacrificial bowl of the cult still exist, or was it melted by the Celts again? Quetzal, 85. When the water god's cult site, that is the water sanctuary, was destroyed, the sacrificial bowl sank into the lake. Billy, then it must still be lying there today on the lake's bottom. Where could this be found, then, at the present time? This certainly has a horrendous value. Quetzal, 86. It certainly is very valuable at the present time. 87. Are you interested in it? 88. If that is the case, then I can be helpful to you in the recovery of the bowl, for I know its resting place, which is only about 80 meters from the shore, and to be sure, at a place that is now named Arlaking. 89. If you then sell it, then you will bring in a very high sum for yourself. Billy, no, I'm not interested in that. First of all, I wouldn't want to enrich myself illegally through this, for here on the earth, antiquity is legally protected and can't simply be sold. Consequently, I would make myself liable to prosecution. And secondly, I'm not interested in it because I am of the view that I must fulfill my task through my own strength and by honest means and, thus, in a modest manner. In a private manner, I am already not interested at all because I am absolutely content with what I have, and thus, I have no desire for fortune or for other great possessions. With that, probably all is said, except that I still wanted to ask as to whether the sacrificial bowl will one day be found by the earth people? Quetzal, 90. That escapes my knowledge. Billy, then now, we can move on to the private matters. 221st contact, Wednesday, December 30th, 1987, 1:04 p.m. Billy, today, I once again have a question regarding the things that you explained to me during the last conversation. I mean in terms of the coming events of the increasingly frequent floods, droughts, storms with snow, rain, and hail, as well as the volcanic eruptions, earthquakes, and forest fires, which will be due in part to natural origin and partly to human origin, as you said. Now, the question was asked about this, what all is meant by natural origin and human origin? Quetzal, 1. Natural origin is everything that results from the natural course of the planetary movements, so therefore the natural volcanic eruptions as well as the natural movements of the sea currents, geomagnetism, the moon's influences, like among other things the low and high tides, the naturally occurring wind currents, and the natural weather conditions as well as forest fires and steppe fires, etc. 2. To these natural processes must be added the natural climate changes and glacial changes, as well as the influences of the moon, which causes both low and high tides but also influences the Earth's magnetic fields. 3. The sun also determines a part of the natural weather and climate happenings of the Earth, and also not in the least the purely cosmic influences as well as those of the galactic central sun and the so-called central black hole of the galaxy, which is named Milky Way by the Earth people. 4. Thus, 7 determining natural factors are to be mentioned, through which all forms of natural weather, sequences of weather conditions, and climate factors are created. 5. Among the 7 factors, the Earth movements are of particular importance, which include the planetary conditions, such as the formation of the interior of the Earth as well as its surface, like the land, seas, lakes, rivers and streams, like the mountains and valleys, forests, rainforests, fields, prairies, deserts, open lands, concrete supporting structures through roads and buildings and, of course, the heights and depths under and over the sea. 6. Also very important are the environmental elements, such as the temperature, air pressure, wind directions and wind speeds, the various precipitations, cloud cover, and the duration of sunshine. 7. The actual local climate results from the diverse interaction of all elements and factors as well as from the geographical latitude of each respective tract of land and from the latitude-dependent radiation intensity, to which is also added in each case the typical and different atmospheric circulation that prevails over the seas, large lakes, streams, deserts, steppes, forests, open lands, and over the rainforests and continents as well as mountains and plains. 8. Even the Earth's magnetism plays an important role, which must not be forgotten. 9. Now, if one makes a total for all influences, etc. of 100%, which must be arranged, as said, into 7 main factors of cause, then these can be divided in their influences, in terms of a percentage, approximately equally. So for every factor of cause, there arises an approximately 14.3% impact on the overall climate of the Earth. 10. But now, if the influences are still added, which arise from the irrational, destructive, and irresponsible machinations in terms of the influencing of the climate, the changing of nature, and the environmental degradation via the Earth person, then it must be mentioned that 50% of all coming natural disasters no longer have to be attributed to purely natural origin but rather to the guilt and burden of the Earth person. 11. Through sheer irrationality as well as through greed for profit, irresponsibility, and willfulness, as well as arrogance and self-glorification, the Earth person already started some time ago to change and violate the naturalness of the planet Earth. 12. With asphalt and concrete, entire lands are built over with roads and buildings and are destroyed, vital seas are brought to drying out, the stock of fish becomes eradicated, the resources of the earth are exploited senselessly and for pure profit and luxury, and air pollution and environmental degradation occur, which surpass everything in irresponsible willfulness and maliciousness. 13. Enormous water dams are senselessly and irresponsibly built, by which shifts of the interior of the Earth take place and a tremendous pressure develops, by what means earthquakes and volcanic eruptions are caused. 14. Courses of rivers and streams are senselessly and irresponsibly straightened, wet meadows are drained, entire housing developments and villages as well as cities are built in meadow plains, lowlands, and at places of deforested meadow woods, by what means no place remains free anymore for the wild waters of floods to be able to spread out and seep away. 15. Peaceful brooks and rivers become raging and all destructive currents and wild waters through their straightening, and nothing can withstand these anymore, whereby they cause devastation and demand the lives of humans and animals and will demand these more and more, like they've never done in all of human memory. 16. In addition, houses and other buildings are built on mountain slopes that are at risk in regards to avalanches and mountain slides, etc. 17. Mountain slopes become obstructed with ski lifts as well as with cable railways, etc., by what means entire mountain landscapes are destroyed and the animal populations are disturbed in their natural life. 18. The greatest of all evils, however, is found in the steadily and inexorably growing overpopulation, through which all mentioned evils become more and more rampant, so also the changes in the global climate. 19. The overall natural circulation of the atmosphere of the Earth is disturbed by irrational human influences more and more, whereby the air pressure and the global temperature change significantly and immense storms and precipitations are caused throughout the whole world, which can be described as torrential, and indeed, especially in the coming time when the Earth and nature begin to avenge themselves by force against the willful and irresponsible interferences, which are criminal and destructive for the planet and its entire life, by the Earth person in undreamed of magnitudes. 20. In the coming time, many feedback effects will arise in nature, which will contain tremendous reciprocal effects. 21. In addition to the natural changes in climate, including, among other things, as explained, also the variability of the sun's influences, especially in terms of the variations in the balance of solar radiation, as well as volcanic eruptions, through which a strengthening of the stratospheric aerosol layer arises. Very strong changes caused by the Earth people play a very large role. 22. Thus, an anthropogenic climate change, that is, a human-induced climate change, develops, as it has never occurred before on the Earth. 23. Above all, this happens through a tremendous energy supply as well as through exhaust fumes and trace gases, through other emissions of all kinds, and through changes in vegetation and through the unstoppable increase of carbon dioxide, etc. 24. Due to the irrationality and irresponsibility of the human being, spatially limited impairments of the atmosphere are caused, which spread themselves globally ever more and cause ever more and greater damages. 25. In this regard, determining factors are primarily exhaust fumes, waste heat, smog, air pollution, photochemical pollution, and acid rain, etc. 26. Overpopulation actually bears the greatest guilt for this because through it, all evil becomes boosted more and more, and indeed, with everything that is conceivable, so it isn't just the street traffic, forest traffic, agricultural traffic, and industrial traffic with internal combustion motor vehicles, but also the overall industrialization and so on and so forth. 27. The Earth people themselves bear the guilt for all unusual natural disasters, and this already for quite some time. 28. But so it will also be in all the awful ages to come, in which the disasters will still multiply and intensify. Billy, thanks. Your explanation in the Earth person's and, above all, the responsible person's ears. Whether it will bring any benefit, however, may well be extremely questionable. If I, however, now briefly summarize the natural influences, then in my judgment, it looks like this. 1. Earth movements influences. 2. Geomagnetism's influences. 3. Lunar influences. 4. Solar influences. 5. Cosmic influences. 6. Central sun's influences. 7. Black hole's influences. As you always say, is this correct? Quetzal, 29. Yes. 30. It is correct. Billy, and what is the case, then, with you? Do you also have large storms, severe weather, and floods, etc. on your worlds, as it is the case with us on Earth? I seem to remember Sam Jace once saying something like that, or was that you? Anyhow, I remember it being said that one isn't allowed to build, settle, and live in areas endangered by water or landslides. Quetzal, 31. Of course, but these are entirely of a purely natural form. 32. Through such natural events, Also, no harm is caused to the people and their possessions, and thus, no human casualties or deaths are caused by such. 33. We also have floods, steppe fires, and forest fires, as well as landslides, etc. on our worlds, but these events are all of a natural form and without any influences by the people. 34. With us, natural disasters also never threaten, which would be hazardous or harmful to humans, because one isn't permitted to build homes or other buildings, etc. in lowlands, meadow plains or deforested meadow woods, near places that are threatened by avalanches or mountain slides, or even to live in plains that could be threatened by floods. 35.